Hi, everybody. Welcome to Tilt Podcast. Today, we're doing a three-way, as in three people talking at once. You know what I mean. We have here Quetzal.
Hey.
And Mistgod.
Greetings.
Greetings. So, how's it going?
Fantantillion-tastic.
No, Fantillion-tastic.
Damn it. I guess a little bit of introduction about myself to those of you who don't know me. I am a Tulpa. I'm going to be 2 years old fairly soon. I'm going to be turning two late September. I know how to switch. So unlike Melian, I can actually take control of the body, which is what I'm doing right now.
Just so everybody knows, some of people who are listening may not know, my name's Mistgod. I have a thought form named Melian, and that's who Quetzal was referring to. Anyway, just to clarify that.
Actually, Mistgod, I got a question for Melian. You say she's not sentient, she's just like kind of just a daydream on autopilot and kind of just your subconscious, so to speak. I do think that's possible, but I want to ask her, what does she think? I mean, just ask her, are you real? Are you sentient? Are you capable of your own thoughts? Ask her that, and what is her response?
She would tell you that she's a person. She may be imaginary, but she's still a person.
So if she thinks she's a... That's actually a pretty good indicator of sentience right there. Because what you claim she is sounds pretty similar to daemons.
Yeah, I've heard of daemons.
They claim that they're just speaking to their inner subconscious. And they're not really sentient. And the daemons themselves will readily admit that they are not sentient and they're just a reflection of their host.
Yeah, I've actually been reading a little bit on the daemon sites, and that's what I was getting to. And I think she's got the elements, some of the elements of daemon. From what I'm seeing on the daemon sites, there are elements of that sound a lot like Melian. Of course, she doesn't have the defining animal form. Daemons are supposed to be personas from the mind that take the form of an animal.
Aren't humans animals?
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think they're supposed to be non-human animals.
Yeah, I've talked to a few of them that they were sentient, and they failed at parallel processing tests, which is the defining thing that determines a Tulpa's sentience, parallel processing.
The defining thing?
I suppose, yeah, that's pretty good evidence right there for parallel processing. I mean, for their sentience.
So if they can parallel process, they're sentient. If they can't, then they're not?
I suppose, yeah. But yeah, that's a pretty good indicator of two minds in one body.
I would actually counter-argue that it is possible that you could have someone who is talented enough that despite whether their daemon is considered sentient or not, could still pass a parallel processing test. I don't think the parallel processing test is necessarily the quintessential proof of sentience or consciousness. I think it's proof that you have a talent.
I don't really know, honestly. I probably shouldn't have said that. I don't really like to make too many assumptions about things regarding this matter.
I really don't know a lot about the parallel processing either, or who makes the tests, or where they're coming from, or even... I'm not even sure who comes up. Are these psychologists creating these tests? I wish somebody could... You know, that's a great question for the forum. Where are these tests coming from? How authentic are they? Could someone, even without a Tulpa, like say a non-Tulpa person, non-Tulpamancer, someone without a daemon, someone without a Tulpa, come along, take the test and pass it, or get a high score on parallel processing? Has anyone done that kind of study where you've got people with Tulpamancer, like Tulpamancers and non-Tulpamancers, taking the same parallel processing test?
That is actually a really, really good thing. Good, interesting concept. I want to try and...
Just to be clear, what tests are we referring to? I know of a variety of different ones that you could use, and they'd all be very different.
You know what my host did to me to try and get me independent?
What?
He made me do... math! The horror!
Oh no.
Math!
Did you find X?
Oh, God. Yes, I became a pirate. I left X marks the spot. But actually, there was this one person I know. I'm going to see if I can try to get a hold of them later, who showed me a parallel processing test where you basically kind of got to count balls going across the screen.
I've seen that one.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that
yeah.
one.
Amelia and I took the test. She got a perfect score 3 times. But here's the thing. I probably took it 45 times before she'd get those 3 perfect scores. There's something, you know. But she was all happy. So I don't know. It's kind of, you know, when I think about that test, I think it was too short. I think it'd been a better test. Had the little thing seems to go, it goes about 20 balls across the screen and then it stops. So if you're really good at counting, and you're really fast, you could probably get a high score every time, whether or not you've got parallel processing. I think if you had more, if it was longer, say closer to 100 going across the screen, it would be more of a conclusive test than it was.
But you'd have to make something that's easy for 2 people to do, and there's a fuzzy line between those.
Well, if I were sitting there counting the balls going across the screen, just one line of them, I could easily count them myself, right, and get the right number. Basically, the way the test works is you've got 2 lines of little balls, colored balls. There's and you're supposed to look with your eyes. You look right in the middle, and then the balls go across the screen, and your TOLPA counts the balls in the bottom, and while you're counting the balls in the top, right? And then when you're finished, you each write down your score, and you see whether or not you were correct. And we were usually about 1 off, maybe 1 or 2 off, but 3 times we were able to get a perfect score. But I'm not sure, you know, if that's, there was nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
You should try it without Melian participating at all. Just see how you do when you go solo.
Right.
That would be interesting.
That is an interesting idea.
Try that parallel processing test by yourself without Melian participating and see what you get on that. And if you get like a really bad score and you get much better when you do it together, I think that is a pretty good indicator that Melian may be sentient. That
together forever.
That and also the fact that she actually says that she's sentient and disagrees with you that she's imaginary and not real.
She doesn't disagree with me. She's just more insistent that she's a person.
By the way, Quetzal, did you listen to the previous podcast?
Oh, I tried to, but I didn't have enough time to get it all done. But I tried to listen to it before we started this one, but I only got 23 minutes in before Mrs. God came in.
All right.
I didn't have enough time. Sorry. I'll try and catch up on it when we're done with recording this one.
I have some questions for you, Quetzal.
All right. Ask away.
First of all, what exactly is a fur dragon?
It's a dragon that has fur. Enough said. Instead of scales, it is fur.
Kind of like the luck dragon in Neverending Story.
God damn it! People keep comparing me to him so much!
Well, he had fur!
I know, we're both white and we both have fur, but we don't really... But people say, you look just like him! And the first time I was like, well... What? Because I'd never heard of that movie, and I looked into him. His name is like Falcor, I think.
Falcor, yeah.
I looked into it because I never actually saw that movie or anything, and I'm like, what? And I looked into it, and I'm like, that does not look like me. I mean, sure, our dominant color, our fur is white, and we're both fur dragons, but other than that, not really. We got different color palettes. I mean, I got blue turquoise eyes.
Yeah, I saw that.
And also, like, I can't remember. I don't think he has horns. And I also got, like, this kind of, like, raccoon marking around my eyes, except it's, like, orange instead of black.
Did Ian do the art of you, Quetzal, or is that...
No, it was a gift.
It was a gift from someone?
Yeah.
So it is original art, though. That's neat.
Yeah, it is original art.
So, Quetzal, are you an original form or... Because you see a lot of tulpas that are patterned after an existing character or an existing image. Are you an original image, like something that was just created from scratch?
I wish. It was just some like character sheet they found that of some dead character from some old account no one uses anymore. And that was pretty cool. So just kind of copied that a little bit. There are a few changes as well. There's some difference, a few differences. It's not exact.
I think that's true of every, I mean, there's no, there, I guess when I said from scratch, it was, I think everything is a variation of different themes. Of even Melian, you know, her name comes from Middle Earth and she's human. So that's not that original. So, I mean, you know, I mean, it's everything is kind of like you take something, you know, a base, and then you change it and make your own, whatever it is, you know.
All the pictures that I show on the forum are original art, though, from people, because we can't draw worth a damn, but we got some friends who can.
Hey, you always take advantage of your resources.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of your resources.
Hey, that's why you network. So, I'm sorry, but I was wondering, I'm just trying to get a visual image in my mind. Quetzal, how big are you? Are you like human-sized? Are you smaller? Are you larger?
I'm about, I'd say about human-sized.
Okay.
So wait. If you're on all fours, then how tall would your, the like, small of your back right before your neck, where would that be?
I'd say, about mid-chest level, I suppose.
All right.
Melian in my head is going, huggable. You're perfect size to be hugged.
Yes, I know. Oh God, I love being hugged, and I love being petted and scratched. And it's just like, oh God, yes. Scratch me behind the ears, and it's just, oh.
So that brings me that makes me wonder about your Wonderland. What kind of Wonderland do you live in?
You know how there's like a little neighborhood circle? It's kind of like that with everyone's houses and stuff around there. There's like a fountain in the center.
Oh, that sounds neat.
What's yours?
Well, we talked about that in the last podcast, but Melian's is kind of endless. Melian's is like Star Trek holodeck, or like the Matrix on the movie The Matrix. She just kind of forms it around her, whatever she wants it to be. She has a central place. She has her dreamscape mansion, though. It's kind of like the memory palace that people create in their minds to remember things. The memory palace has been around for me for a very long time. It's been something that has come up in recurring dreams since I was very young. It seemed like the natural place for her to live because I'm always dreaming. It's kind of like this a mansion that is endless on the inside. There's no limit to how many rooms and how many different levels there are. And it has the additional quality of just happening to be haunted.
Oh, scary ghosts.
Yeah, there's ghouls and there's ghosts. Most of them are on the upper story. Some of them are in the cellar, but beneath the house, in the crawl space beneath the house. But she's able to deal with those pretty well. She's living in the house that's a little bit, part of the house that's a little bit more stable. There are parts of it that have kind of a nightmarish kind of like fogginess to them. When I'm dreaming, I'll be walking into those sections and investigating doors and rooms and things. And there's always something new, especially in the upper levels. The part that Melian lives in is pretty stable. I use it as a memory palace. There's a library. That's pretty much where I store things for memory, is in the library. And she can go in there and look at stuff. There's a feast hall, there's a computer room, there's a Roman bath, there's a garage with all of her cars, different vehicles that she uses, and kind of like a big, there's a grand entrance hall. It's kind of like an art gallery. The entrance hall is an art gallery where we store a lot of imageries and that things that we want to remember.
Where does she drive to with these cars?
Anywhere she wants. And she's got a Humvee, she's got all kinds of different sports cars, motorcycles, tanks.
I got a question, though. Why drive when you can fly?
Oh, she does that, too.
You know, I swear to God, if Ian ever gets a plane, if he ever gets enough money to buy, like, a private jet, you know what I would do when I figure out how to fly? I would, like, put, like, you know how, like, some of these small private planes have, like, banners that they fly, that trail behind them.
Uh-huh.
I'll get one and it would say, "Where is your plane, peasants?"
What?
Where is your plane, peasants?
Why?
For the lols. Why else?
You're going to spend thousands of dollars on a plane and a banner and a plane license and a...
Getting the pilot's license and all of that to fly, unless you have your own private pilot.
Yeah, because I think even if you have a private plane, you still have to have a license to drive it because, you know, if you crash it, then that's bad. And so you have to do the things. And
yeah,
stuff.
I know. Whatever.
Now, I want to know is, do you have to have a license to have a banner behind your plane saying, don't you wish you had your own plane, peasant?
No, it's where is your plane, peasant?
Oh, where is your plane? Same difference.
Yeah.
It'd have to be kind of a, it couldn't be a jet. It would have to be something like a biplane or something.
I know, I wasn't thinking of, I said jet, but I didn't mean to. I was thinking, yeah, something tiny like a Cessna.
I feel like it'd be cheaper to get someone else to do this for you.
Maybe. Oh, whatever. But it's not my plane, though.
It'd still be pretty damn expensive, but cheaper than getting your own license.
I think we all have dreams like that where we kind of do something amazing that makes everybody else just kind of look at us in awe. And that's the most unusual one I think I've ever heard.
My gosh. For the longest time, I wanted to get a limousine to drive me home from sixth grade graduation.
Oh, I think every kid thinks of that. You know, the funny thing is I was impressed by limousines until I found out you could rent them. I'd see a limousine and I'd go, oh, look, a limousine. Wow, that must be a really rich person, you know? And then I found out you could rent them. And my hometown has limousine service. You could rent them for, I don't know how much they are.
I remember looking it up. It was like $200 an hour or something.
Yeah, it's kind of expensive. But I mean, it's still within the range where you could rent one and drive around it and look like you're a king for a little while. Put your little banner on the back. Where is your limousine, peasants?
I don't know. It might have to be a bumper sticker.
Yes. Yes.
And yes, Melian does have a limousine in her garage.
Of course. I mean, you can have any car you want and as many as you want.
You know, the funny thing, we were just talking about that in the chat room. I was in the chat room and she was talking to people about her shoe collection. She has an endless pile of shoes and she remembers them all. She's got these whole rooms devoted to shoes. They're like, well, why do you have to keep your shoes? Why don't you, can you just summon them, right? Because you can just make them up. Why do you have to have, see, it's like she collects things and it's just, it is kind of funny how we do that because she could just say have one pair of shoes, right? That just changes. If it's just made out of dream matter or dream energy, she could just change her shoes without having to go and, you know, but she has whole rooms where they're shelves. It's all organized, you know, by type and by color and by design. And she has a hallway where it's right off her bedroom. She'll go down this hallway. There's other rooms devoted to clothing, but there's something about the shoes. She has this immense amount of shoes and she's always coming up with new ones.
Women love the shoes.
I don't know. Yeah, it does seem to be, my stepdaughter has quite a few.
I have a pair of tennis shoes that I wear exclusively. If I'm not wearing them, I'm not wearing any shoes.
Yeah, I've got one pair. Pretty much one pair of shoes. Now, why the detail on the Wonderlands, though? It seems to be like once it gets going and it starts expanding, you guys know what the Memory Palace is, right?
Yeah.
Have you heard of Memory Palace?
I kind of. That sounds like something that other people... That sounds like a Memory House type thing where people with systems who can like switch or whatever, who are very autonomous, all the Tolpas, the Tolharms or whatever, they can access that area to get access to the memories of others, something like that.
People have talked about having structure for how you interact with your Tolpa or your thought form, things like talk about servitors and...
Oh god, servitors are nice because I can just create my own slaves to do my bidding.
What can they do that you can't do?
Carry me around on a throne?
Ah.
No, I'm not exactly sure what a servitor is.
Technical difficulties.
I was talking about servitors and the Wonderland and Melian, when she first went on DeviantArt, when she was chatting, it seemed, I don't know, when she was Tolpa typing, chatting, something was missing. I wasn't connecting to her very well, and I was losing her voice. I wasn't connecting with her very well. I had a friend who is getting his PhD in computer programming. He, of course, always thinks about computers, and he's going, well, why doesn't she have, if you've got a computer, how come she doesn't have one? He's going, you're just kind of picking her talking. And so maybe that's why it's not working, is because you're typing and she's talking. What if she was typing on her own computer? So we came up with the idea of the Magicktron 3000 Dreamscape Matrix computer system.
Magicktron?
Magicktron 3000 Dreamscape Matrix computer system. Because her Dreamscape is kind of like the Matrix, right? Anyway, so we talked about it quite a bit. We designed it. We actually sat down and designed this computer together for her. It was delivered to her in boxes and she had to assemble it. It's got all the aspects you would imagine of the Matrix computer you see in the movie The Matrix, but it has it's voice interactive, so she could talk to it. It's almost like another character in her world. I don't know if that's a servitor or not. It works as an interface, and when she's interacting with me, it's through Magicktron. When we're exclusively on the internet, Magicktron is always involved. She's either typing directly on Magicktron when we're doing the Tulpa typing, or Magicktron is monitoring everything that she's doing and typing for her as almost like a proxy before the proxy, if that makes sense. And it seemed to work as a mental prop does that make sense? It seemed to kind of like bridge that gap, and it made things more clear. And I think it's everything you do with your, in my opinion, from what I'm learning, is everything you're doing with your Tulpa is about visualization, at least up until the point where they become fully autonomous and they possess, like Quetzal's doing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is, when you're proxying anyway, it's a lot of visualization. So you need some sort of structure, like the memory palace, you know? See, you got to have something to start with, and for it to seem, I don't know, just for it to seem real, I needed that extra prop. I call everything that she does, it's like I've used the analogy of a movie set. Everything she's doing is part of a movie set, and her Wonderland needed that prop, bro. It needed, well, there's a lot of noise going on.
I'm sorry, okay. Noise.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
You're gonna edit this out, aren't you?
What? No, I'll just leave this in. Okay, no more noise.
No, so anyway, so Magicktron is really cool. I like the idea of it. It's like he's not there. He's not really involved when Mila and I are personally doing something, like going jogging or something like that. But as soon as I log online and she starts talking, Magicktron is there and he's involved in everything she does. I think he's kind of a servitor. He performs a function that isn't so much being a Tulpa himself or a thought form himself.
I'm confused. What exactly does Magicktron do?
Okay. How do I say this? He's an interface. He narrates for a lot of the times when she's typing and she'll say, and she wants to describe what she's wearing and what she's doing, Magicktron will do a narration and he, because he can always see her. And I don't have to narrate. Magicktron does it. The other thing is, he opens up when she's going to go from one area of the dreamscape to another while in cyberspace. He opens up portals for her so that it's all imagined, you know, it's imaginary. It's the Wonderland.
Of course.
Yeah, that's a servitor. That's a good example of a servitor.
I wasn't sure. I don't know. I just know how my brain works. Whether it's a Tulpa, whether it's a servitor, I don't know. But it just seems real to me, and I do it because it's fun, you know? I'm online with Milan for a lot of reasons, but mainly because it's fun to share it with you guys, you know what I'm saying?
The internet is serious business.
You know what's interesting about Magicktron? When I went to go draw Milan sitting at Magicktron, the drawing drew itself.
Oh, I remember that picture. I saw that.
What do you mean it drew? Do you mean like...
It drew itself.
Do you mean like you weren't in control of your hands?
Well, no. I mean, when I started drawing it, normally I'll take a lot of, I'll do a lot of erasing and re-sketching and then I'll screw up a lot, you know, and have to redo it and I'll start over. And I'm not that highly skilled of an artist. But when I sat down to draw a magic drawing, it all came out in one flow. It took me, that drawing took me about maybe 10 minutes. And it just came out. And I was like, wow. And it was just like Magitron is like, here I am. And it just was probably one of the fastest drawings I've ever done. And then I added in the screen, the images of the what's on the screens and everything digitally. And yeah, it just, that was interesting. Magitron was just came into being pretty quick. And he has his own voice too. When he speaks to Melian or to others, he doesn't talk a lot, but he will occasionally. He sounds like HAL 9000 from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, kill it with fire.
Yeah, he's a lot like HAL 9000.
I can't let you do that, Dave.
Yeah, you got it. And my name just happens to be David.
Whatever you do, do not trust it to open the pod bay doors.
That's it. He got it. And he like, I enjoy working with you, Melian. Yeah. And he always has new buttons on him that just appear. Like Melian will walk into her computer room and there'll be a new button there, bright and shiny and glowing, some bright color, so irresistible. And she wants to push the button, but she doesn't know what it's going to do. She'll push the button and it's something like one time she pushed the button and it created a new part of her dreamscape mansion. It just created an ice cream parlor, just appeared off of her feast hall with all the different ice cream in it and the different toppings. And of course, she didn't know what it did right away. She just pushed the button.
You know, I'm pretty sure that Magitron must be pretty annoyed by Melian by now because she keeps pushing his buttons.
Exactly. She has a robot double as well.
A robot double?
Yeah, that came with Magitron, called Melbot. Melbot, I don't know if that's another servitor or not, but Melbot does clean, like, household chores around the house. Not a lot to be done there, but she kind of assists Magitron. She's kind of like Magitron's legs, where Magitron can't move, Melbot can, and Melbot and Magitron are connected.
Does she talk in a robotic voice?
You know, Melbot doesn't say a lot, but she looks a lot, she looks like a... slightly smaller robotic version of Melian, and she dresses in kind of like a sexy French maid.
You know what the servitors in my mind are, though? In our mind, it's nothing like that, really. It's just mainly me that I just want to create and make disappear these random people that aren't really sending or anything, just like a snap of my finger, and they just basically they do shit like carry me on a throne or something, or maybe I want to be petted, petted by a bunch of people. I just like snap my fingers, and then they're just all over me, and it's like, oh yes, and they're not real. I can just make them disappear with it easily.
You know, I'm getting the impression, just a thought, that you maybe like being petted.
Yeah, I think I have all this fluff for a reason. You know,
I know now.
So, Niscott, you said you were going to ask me a bunch of questions. Do you have any more for me?
Yeah, well, I this is like this first time I've ever been able to sit and talk live to a Tolpa. So I did have, but I didn't want to kind of take over. I'm not the host, so I wanted to be careful not to.
Don't worry about it.
First of all, when did Ian first learn about Tolpas? How did that process come about? How did Quetzal come to be?
I guess I'll just have him speak real quick. It's Ian. I found out about Tolpas because I was friends with this dude who was a total 4chaner, and he hung around X a lot, and he discovered Tolpas from X, and then he told me about it, and that's how I found it out.
See, how did he present this to you? Because generally, it's not taken kindly.
Oh, he asked if I knew what it was, and I'm like, no, but this is why we have Google. And I looked it up, but you know what the first thing I did was? I went on Google Urban Dictionary, and that was a bad thing.
What's the Urban Dictionary definition?
Okay, the first one I didn't understand, so I went to the second definition, which says, quote, brony term for an imaginary friend. I whip my dick out and put it in, and then it has like a quote, I whip out my dick and put it in her Wagyu for my Applejack Tolpa. And I'm like, what the fuck is this, dude? What the hell is this? I had a bad first impression. But he's like, no, 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 no. It's It's not that. And then he just showed me he linked me to Kiadash's guide.
I have no idea how to pronounce it either.
Kiadash, that's how I say it. He linked me to Kiadash's guide, and I read that, and that's pretty much kind of what convinced me, and also it's the guide I used to make Tulpas. Now, sadly enough, though, I'm not friends with the dude anymore because the bastard killed his Tulpa. He decided it wasn't real. Killed it off.
So after you found out what a Tulpa was, how did you go about creating Quetzal?
Quetzal wasn't my first. He's my third.
Oh, okay.
My first was Tanov, and I have a little bit of a progress report, but I stopped updating it a long time ago before he was even born.
Unnoticed.
I'm just like, yeah, Jean-Luc replied to me, he's like, any updates in the past 2 years? And I'm just like, let it die! Let it die!
I try to do my research, you know.
Yeah, I thought of a form. I thought Vortigaunt. I was really into Half-Life, and I tried to make a Vortigaunt Tulpa, and that was Tanov, my first one. I didn't really work on personality too much, because that's not really how I let them make their own. I skipped that step, and I just kind of went to forcing. Not much else to say. I did it for about 30 minutes a day.
That's what fascinates me about the whole thing is I didn't approach this from when Create Melian was created. I didn't do this formal process that people are doing in the Tulpa community.
I know you were daydreaming and you would kind of space out. That's kind of a form of active forcing, so that works just as well.
That's what people have told me.
But what I did was I would literally close my door in my room and I would just kind of meditate. Like those monks, because I mean at first I would try and do it lying down on my bed, but I had a problem of falling asleep. But I figured, I looked into and I just realized, I tried that pose that you see monks doing, like cross-legged and stuff. And I tried that, and there's a reason they do it like that, because you can't fall asleep. And it worked great.
Yeah, you have to sit with your back very straight.
Actually, I kind of had my back leaned up against the wall for comfort, but I mean, still, I was cross-legged and it was I didn't fall asleep.
And you mean like the not the normal cross-legged, but like the one that's sort of can be hard to get into, and you have to like lift your foot up weird and all that?
Yeah, I guess no. I think it was just a normal one. I don't know. Well, I just found I might not
the
be...
twisty pretzel, but the just cross-legged, the Western form of a meditation pose.
I guess it might have been twisted. I don't know. I just found what worked.
Okay, were your feet above or below your knees?
Below.
Then that's not the pretzel twisty. The pretzel twisty, you pull your feet up onto your knees. It creates kind of a nice base when you do that. It kind of locks your feet into position, and it actually is easier to hold a straighter back with your feet propped up on top of your knees. It's a little bit, if your ankles aren't very flexible, it's a little painful at first. That's why you got to stretch. You got to do a little, some yoga stretching every day to get those ankles flexible so that when you pull them up on your knees, they'll lock into place there.
Okay, fine. I did it wrong. Sue me. It still worked.
No, I'm not saying it's wrong at all.
I'm just trying to figure out which way you did do it, and then he assumed that because he didn't know what he was talking about.
Oh God, the meditation police are gonna come and arrest me.
And they're gonna arrest us both, all three of us. No, I think most people who do that, the cross-legged pose in the West, aren't doing it the way they do it in Tibetan Buddhism or whatever. They're just sitting cross-legged. Which is fine, but that's what I know. That's one of the things I wanted to know. Is that what people are doing? Because I've got this mental image in my mind
really.
Of people forcing.
Most people don't actually do that.
Yeah, so
it's just something I discovered myself, and I give it as advice. People are like, "Whoa, I never thought of that." Most people don't really actually do it like that.
Yeah, so they'll just lay somewhere, or just in a relaxed place, sit somewhere, or
pretty much, yes.
I just sit
okay
in a chair.
Yeah, what I would do for my daydreaming forcing, if you'd call it forcing, is I would find a quiet place. It was either the silent study at the library at school, or I would come home to my room, close the door, And I would just, I like to sit close to a wall. You know, if I'm sitting in a one of those little enclosed desks, you know what I'm talking about? One of those testing desks with the sides on and the top around it. And I would just stare at a surface fairly close to my face. It helped if it was kind of a blank space, like a white space or a dark panel of wood. And I would just stare at that and I would just kind of like zone out and just kind of like, and then the daydream would start playing. And some people have told me that's exactly what forcing is like. It's the same thing. It's just, you're just using different words for it. And I guess so. I'm wondering though, was there any kind of prep? Like I said, I would sit and look at a blank space, right? It helped to look at a blank space, like a blank wall. Did you have any prep that you would do? Would you breathe at all a special way? Or would you clear your mind? Would you do any kind of mental exercises or physical exercises before you started forcing?
Not really.
Okay. I would love to ask that question of more people, maybe in the forum or something. There's probably stuff about that in there if I look around. I didn't do any kind of prep at all other than the fact that I would calm myself. And I guess I would do some breathing in that sense, is that I would, the more relaxed I was and the more relaxed I am when I'm daydreaming about Melian, or the better the imagery comes to me, if that makes sense. There's less just mental distractions coming in from the outside. It helps to be in a quiet space, but I've gotten so good at it now, I could do it anywhere. But when we first started, it was like that. I had to find a quiet space for it to really work really well. And for me to be able to visualize her really well, it had to be kind of a quiet spot. And I'd get locked into it, right? I wouldn't want, it was so fun and enjoyable. That's one thing I don't understand about forcing. When I hear people talking about it, they'll say, oh, they'll talk about it like it was this chore. It was painful. It caused a headache or it was just exhausting.
Oh, yeah. The headaches can be a problem.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
So, Miss God, I'm assuming you've never gotten a headache from this.
No. The closest I get to it is maybe eye fatigue, because my eyes were usually open. If I was, especially at night, if I'm not sleeping, you know, because sometimes I do this, you know, at night when I'm supposed to be sleeping, I never got exhausted or tired. In fact, it was the opposite. I wanting to quit was the hard part, because it was so enjoyable. I get so into it, I'd lose track of time. And time would go by really fast, and I'd look at my watch or the clock and go, oh my gosh, 3 hours went by. And I it was almost like entering a time warp, losing myself within that world and then coming back out. You know, I said something, or Melian actually said something. We actually wrote a story together where we were describing what we have seen as two different types of topomancers. I don't know if this is just our impressions, but what we've noticed is that there's two different types. Those who can easily visualize very easily, and those who cannot. The end result is the same. You end up with a tulpa. But those who cannot visualize easily are not natural daydreamers. They have to really work at it. And it is very painful for them. They have to learn how to visualize. And they come away with a headache, and it's a chore. And oh, they got to sit there for an hour. And I got to force myself to do. That's why they call it forcing. I have to sit here for an hour and do this. Oh my gosh, I'd rather do so many other things.
Yeah, I never got why it was called forcing.
Yeah, and then you've got the daydreamers, the natural visualizers, the natural imaginers. They'll just drop into it, and then they'll just go, I'm having so much fun staring at the wall. I'm having a blast staring at the wall. And I could do it for 3 hours, and I'm not tired, and I don't want to quit. Oh, dinner time? I should eat something, right? Almost forgot to eat.
Hate it when that happens.
I always compare it to watching a movie or watching a television show, because that's what it was like for me. I am learning that there are people who, in the tulpa community, and it's a large group, you know. At first, we were baffled by that. Melian and I were like completely, what? Doesn't make, what? How can it be that you have to actually force yourself to do it? And then, you know, and then it's like, oh, I have to do this for half an hour. I have to do this for an hour a day. We would do 6-7 hours and like, oh, maybe we should do something else, you know? And then when we were doing quote unquote something else, she was still there. I mean, we were like walking around and she's still, you know, it's just kind of interesting that I'm learning that there are two different, it seems like there's two different types.
You know, now that you say that, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think we when we try to communicate to one another, when we're talking to one another in the forum and in the chat rooms, sometimes we're not getting what each other are saying. They'll say, well, I have a wonderland and it took me 3 weeks to create it. But my wonderland is a single room with a table and a chair. And And Melian's going, what? Your poor Tulpa only has a table and a chair? Poor Tulpa. And it took you 3 weeks, you know. And I think what it is the permanence of the image, the solidity of the image, and how much that is important to you. It's like the memory palace. Okay, the memory palace is a very, very solid building. It's, you know it in detail. You know all the different piece of furnishings. You know where the different rooms are. You know what's in those rooms. You could describe it. If you were hypnotized, you could describe the memory palace in absolute flawless detail. You could walk through it and it's the same every time you walk through it. That's what they're talking about. When they're talking about their Wonderland being so specific, it's like the memory palace. I think for some of us who are daydreamers, the Wonderland's a little bit more fluid. It's a little bit more of like a dream. We kind of summon it up. There's a little bit of fuzzy edges to it. You know, things kind of shift around. It might not be the same from 1 minute to the next. More like dreaming or imagining, and not so much like the memory palace. And I think they're both just as legitimate. In a way, the people who are doing the memory palace type Wonderland, where it's more specific, I think they're kind of, sometimes they're getting a little bit more power out of it, if that makes sense, as far as how strong their Tulpa is going to be, how the Tulpa is going to have a lot more, I don't know, does that make sense what I'm saying?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. I think, okay, I'll give you an example of why I'm saying that. If you have a memory palace type Wonderland, where things are in a set place, right? When you take an object, and it is an object that has been created, and it is solid in your mind. It's not something that was just appeared instantly, right? It's a solid object that exists in the memory palace, and it's always there. And you pick it up and you look at it, it's always the same. And you put it in a place, and you say you put it in a drawer, and you close that drawer, and then you go off, you're not forcing anymore, you go off and you do something else, and a month goes by, and you come back in, and you go, where did we put that? And the Tulpa goes, oh, it's in this drawer, walks up the drawer, opens it up, and pulls it out. It's the same object, and it was in the same drawer, okay? That's how solid and stable it is.
Wouldn't it just appear wherever you remembered it, even if you remembered it wrong?
See, that's the difference. That's the difference, I think, between what, that's exactly the distinction of what I'm saying, is the more of a daydreamer kind of Wonderland. You could just summon it out of the midair. It just make it reappear. And there it is, right? In the memory palace, more like Tulpa world, it would be specifically in a specific place every time. You put it there, that's where it's going to stay. Like you pick it up, move it, and you set it on the table. When you leave your Wonderland and then come back to your Wonderland, it's still going to be on the table.
Okay, so this is Kessel again. So that's what you mean by memory house. I was a bit confused at first, but because I've heard that term before, but it just mainly been a place in the mindscape where the Tulpas can access the memories of the host. Hence memory house.
It is that. It is that. But a memory palace could be used for a lot of different purposes.
I've heard of memory palaces, but I can't speak. you know, used irrelevant of Tulpas just to remember things better.
I think what I'm not talking about memory palaces specifically, but I'm talking about are Wonderlands that were created in the same way that you create a memory palace, where the focus on visualization is intense. There's more permanence. It becomes a structure in the mind that is immutable. It's the same in every time. And when you go there, and the detail's the same every time. And when you go, like when you make changes in that type of Wonderland, the changes stick. Now, that's what I'm getting from other people, is that, and that's why they're saying, oh man, that was so much work. Well, I didn't, you know, Melian does have a memory palace. Her dreamscape is like a memory palace, but like I said, around the edges, it's more fluid. It tends to be kind of like a fuzzy dream world and around, but there are parts of it that are very set in.
Did you have to work real hard to make that mansion?
Yes and no. I think I visualized it so much in and out of, you know, it was, like I said, it's part of a recurring dream. I dream about the memory palace that I call it. It's the Dreamscape Mansion. I don't even call it a memory palace, but it's been part of my life for as long as I can remember. And it's just the way that my mind works. And it would just seem like the natural place for her to go and live, because it was kind of like a structure that was already there. You know, why not let her move in and have her a couple of rooms in there? She's taken over more than a couple rooms since then, but there's other personas in there too. There's a persona called Emily Abigail. She's a ghost that lives upstairs. There's kind of connections to some dreams I had about her too. So there's other personas that live in the house.
It's Ian again. You know what though? Your little comment though about Emelian being like, oh, the portal, when with just the room with the table in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel the same way too, because I mean, I'm not a Tulpa. I can switch now. I can access the Mindscape just like a regular Tulpa, and oh my god, it is amazing. It is like, well, and if I had just a room and a table, that'd be like,
and a chair.
This is boring. Why do I want to switch? What's the point of switching? What's the damn point? I switch a lot because I'm like a god in there, and I can just mess around with things, and it's really, really great. And also interact with my Tulpas as if they're around me physically, which is actually a plus.
Oh my god. Plus. You know, this is the first time I've ever contemplated the purpose of switching from the point of a host. I've been saying, what's the point? Because I don't see why Emelian would want to switch. But I never even considered what it would be like for me to be in the Tulpa world. That's an interesting point.
You can physically interact with them. That's one thing.
You know, I can really imagine. I have what I call an avatar in the dream world.
I know what you mean. Because, like, if I'm fronting, I can still interact with them that way. And I had that avatar, too, before I got to switching. Bruh, it's Kessel again, though. You know one of the reasons I like to switch, though? If I'm just a Tulpa that can't even possess, then how am I going to play video games? I like Vidya.
And here we see how it's beneficial for both parties.
I mean, I just like screwing around in Team Fortress 2 a lot. It's America's number one war-themed hat simulator. Yeah, I just scream on the mic a lot, too. It's fun.
I'm sure people enjoy that.
Well, maybe not scream, but yeah. On the internet, no one knows you're a fur dragon, though. No one!
Melia and I play Tetris, and she does these kind of like these dress-up games, like cutesy little video games where you have a little doll, the fashion doll, and you put different clothes on it. We do that the same way we do the Tulpa typing, where we're collaborating together. But I feel her presence when we're playing the game, and we're like, oh crap, oh we're gonna die. It's almost, and she'll get back. Well, hurry up, man, turn that. And it's so it's not exactly possession, but I have fun with that.
So, Miskot, I'm curious if you've ever considered making a second person.
I don't even think I could.
Why not?
Well, maybe, but you have to understand, with Melian, I was absolutely obsessed with her. Absolutely obsessed with Melian. I had the desire to do it, if that makes sense. And I just can't imagine summoning that kind of energy again.
Well, you don't have to do it as excitedly as you did it the first time, but certainly there's someone else or something or...
You know, I think the closest I would probably get to that would probably take Magitron, make Magitron, try to get him to be more present, I guess, more active.
I just want to say something, though, Ian, again. When you make your first one, the subsequent ones become a lot easier. Because I guess your brain is trained to be able to do that kind of thing, I guess. Because the first one, you're kind of hardwiring it and rearranging the neurons and everything. But the second time, it's already been done. So, I mean, it's easier.
People have asked me if Magitron was another thought form. I always resist that. I'm like, no, he's just part of Melian's Wonderland.
Technically, he is a thought form of sorts, just not a sentient one. He's a servitor.
Yeah.
But we are calling him he, so...
Exactly. He has a personality, and he does talk. He's actually talked to people on the internet, too. People say, well, is he another thought form? And I'm like, well, or another Tulpa or whatever. And I'm like, no, he's just part of Melian's, he's her narrator.
It's artificial intelligence, like talking to an NPC in a game.
I don't know.
That's what I think of it. Like, because you can, like, get computers to talk to people, like Cleverbot. I'm just imagining him like Cleverbot.
No, he does have a personality, but he's a lot like Hell 9000. I don't see what I'm trying to understand by talking to you guys is, where is that divide between something like an imaginary friend who just seems really, really real to you and thought form and Tulpa? Where is that divide?
I don't think there is one.
And that's what I'm beginning from people You know, I've had people say this. You're either a Topa or you're not a Topa. And if you're not a Topa, you're not legitimate and you should leave. I've had people say, if you're either a Topa or you're not a Topa. And if you're not a Topa, you need to work to becoming a Topa. If you don't have any desire to be a Topa, you should leave. As far as the community is, anyway. And I'm like, well, I've had other people tell me, I'm not really sure if you are, if Melian is a Topa or not. You know, and so I don't think I'm ever going to know conclusively one way or another.
It's Queso again. That's one of the nicknames people have given me, Queso. But, like I said, just do that parallel processing test without her and see how you do.
I'm also very curious what the listeners have to say on this subject. Where is the line between the two? Or does it exist, you know?
We're actually going to have to go look pretty soon, looks like. And we should probably get this thing done, this next part done really quickly. I'm going to let Tano front. Salutations. So, there have actually been studies done to show the sentience of Topas. I believe Kessel showed you a study that Mont showed the difference in brainwaves and all of that other stuff, Mistgod. It is, you've probably seen it too, Jean-Luc. It's the plurality thing on the forums. Have you seen that?
No, or if I have, I forgot.
You know what, if you can find it, a link to it, we can... Jean-Luc, maybe you could put a link on with the...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Plurality, a scientific and philosophical overview.
I think I do remember seeing that. Somebody, yeah, sent me a link.
Kessel is the one who sent you that link.
Oh, okay. Someone is Kessel. That someone was Kessel. Thank you, Kessel.
But there you go, Jean-Luc. There have been a few other studies, too, with parallel processing, and it all comes to show and suggest highly that Topas are indeed sentient. And additionally, there's also another interesting thing too. Really, really advanced ones can alter the psychology of their hosts and each other, and not necessarily in a malicious way either, in a beneficial way. Like, for example, I don't know if you have read it, Mistgod, but I know Jean-Luc has read it. Kessel has actually found a sexuality switch, and he's able to alter the sexuality of everyone in the system at will.
Well, that's a fun trick.
Indeed.
I talked about, in the last TulpaCast, I talked about Melian's energy. I said she has an energy to her. She has kind of an aura, but not necessarily a metaphysical one. And I also talked about how I talked about all the different aspects of what she does for me. And I also talked about the fact that she's always happy. She makes me laugh and she's happy. And certainly when Melian starts interacting with me, when Melian's interacting, it definitely has an effect on my psychology. So that I can completely believe. I do believe that is very plausible.
Could you give specific examples? I'm not sure I know what you mean, Mistgod. Altering what?
What do you mean? Like, well, altering your mood is probably the best way to say it.
Oh, okay.
So she has made you feel happy for seemingly no apparent reason. You just suddenly feel happy.
Imagine if you have a girlfriend, right? You haven't seen her in a while, and suddenly she walks into the room. There's that connection instantly. Instantly react. Emotionally, you instantly react. And you sense her presence when she's near you. It's elation. It makes you have this sense of connection to that person.
I see. But actually...
You're more together than you are apart.
All right. But really advanced Topas can, it seems, can alter the psychology of their hosts in more advanced ways. Very few have actually done this, and this is a new concept, it would seem, but it is possible for a Topa to alter the chemical cocktail of within the brain. I'm friends with a system who has done that, and I am actually going to try it myself.
Isn't that the same as altering the mood? I mean, isn't your mood partially determined by what chemicals?
Partially, but it also has other effects too. In fact, I myself have just recently increased the levels of adenosine triphosphate within the body.
Oh?
I have found a way to do that. And adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, is a very important chemical in the process of cellular respiration. And if I increase ATP, I increase overall energy within the body.
So how do you measure your success? How do you know you've done it?
Ian is now more energetic, significantly so. He has a lot more energy and endurance. And additionally, he's also a lot hungrier, which is to be expected, because this raises the metabolism and an increased calorie intake is required.
Huh, makes sense.
You know, it sounds a lot like Melian kicking me out of the bed in the morning, getting me up and going jogging. I think what we're touching on is kind of interesting. However you visualize it, whether it's an increase in ADP?
ATP.
Adenosine
triphosphate.
Okay, you go juice. Ketzel's giving you go juice. No, I
don't. Tanov. He oh, is okay. Not. I am not letting him mess around with the cocktail of chemicals in the brain.
There's some shouldn't be involved in that kind of thing. That's really cool. That's really cool, and that could be a subject for a whole nother thing to talk about. Can your tulpa or thought form actually increase your energy level, make you feel better?
Yes, I believe so, because if he's tired, I can reduce levels of gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is a signal suppressant in the brain, and it blocks out signals in neurons. And if I decrease that, I increase the overall activity and his alertness.
The way I'm interpreting that, and I don't, hopefully this is okay to say it this way. The way I'm interpreting that is the way when people meditate, they do visualization. They can actually cause changes in the body, breathing, things, you know, slow down their heart rate, those kind of things, just through mental visualization. I think what you're doing is kind of picturing or imagining these chemicals in your mind and you're changing them. And it's actually having an effect on you. And I think that there's something to that. I do. I really think there's something to that.
Yes. And additionally, though, I can also make Ian just feel extremely happy out of nowhere. I have done this experiment earlier today, and he just suddenly felt really, really happy for seemingly no reason. And what I did was I increased levels of serotonin and dopamine.
How are you doing that? I mean, do you have a control room? I just pictured an engineering, like on Star Trek, this guy sitting in a chair in an engineering room, like, I gotta push this button. I'll just turn this dial and see what happens. Oh, look, he's going loopy. I better turn it back down again.
Yes, that is the way I do it. I have this control system in the Mindscape.
So that is just like Magicktron. You asked me what Magicktron was all about, and that's kind of giving you more of an idea. Magicktron controls Melian's he's the interface between her, me, and the internet, right?
Perhaps. An additional thing, though, to say, Ketzel has also managed to alter Ian's gender identity as an experiment. He got Ian to think that she was a girl, a female, for a brief amount of time as an experiment, just to see if it was possible.
And with that, we're going to have to end the podcast because I'm running out of time.
Oh, man, I wanted to explore that.
Oh, well.
So, well, tune back in next time.
Wait, before you go, though, I shall provide a link to the thread in question for anyone who would like to read more, because this was mentioned in a thread.
I will be reading that. Thank you.
Yes, the thing about the sexuality is on the first page, and the thing about the gender identity is on page two.
I have a feeling he's having way too much fun with that control room.
Bruh, you're absolutely right. This kind of thing is fun to do sometimes. And this is why I do not trust him with the body's chemicals.
Thank you all very much for listening. Thank you, Miska. Thank you, Quetzal, for being here, as well as Ian and...
Tanov.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Thank you for the opportunity again.